Full sound. It's like everyone has finally gotten here. Some of us, our minds were at a great distance for a great long time. And it's amazing what a little fatigue will do. It kind of brings us back to ourselves. I see it in your faces. It's a softness. Beautiful. And today is the last full day of the Sesshin and the last full day of the Ango. Tomorrow we celebrate with our new Shuso, inviting her to show us what she's got. The way we might paraphrase the study text this year. What you got? And we've been looking at that term expression in all kinds of different ways during this period of time. Joshin Sensei has been exploring in the Village Zendo in a study group the five expressions of life in a very interesting and unusual way. And I'm sorry I've missed it. I've just heard from many of you about it. It was very, very powerful on Sundays. And Shinryu gave a great talk on the Vajra expression, the study expression. Very well suited to do that, being a scholar himself. And the difference between scholarly study and what we're doing. Very, very good. So if you missed that, it's on your friendly website. Esho Hoshi led a study group on expression in the Zendo in early August, didn't you? Right. Was that recorded?
It was not.
Uh-huh. Sometimes we don't do the study group. It's just too awkward with the microphones and so forth. I'm sorry we didn't. So then we all came to hear. Of course, we had the first one, Dai session, and those were some wonderful Dharma talks also. Also exploring in particular the source of our five expressions, the source of the idea of using expression at the Zendo. Dotoku, Dogen's fascicle. And there were some really brilliant talks. And I encourage you to listen if you missed those. And then coming up on this, Miyoko opened our Sesshin beautifully, recommending how we look at our practice of Sesshin and how we can find our true home in expression. And Tokyo talking about coming from the center, from our whole being, expressing whatever needs to be expressed, trusting that we can express that. And Esho encouraged us to make ourselves aware of our tendency to self everything and thus cloud our expression of truth. She spoke of how even in this Sangha of people who are sincerely seeking the way, we can obscure our expression. We can not see what we're seeing and not express what we're seeing. So that is our question, you know. How do we actualize our expression? I have to think of our Tenzos. We're not here in the room right now, which is good. I don't want them to get the big head. Seiki and... Whoops. That was precious. jigging the little heads around. Joyful caring, joyful attention. That food that's so delightful to the eye and the mouth. And the kitchen so filled with grace and silence. That, too, is expression. And Arshuso Ikai, her name means ocean of healing. Ikai. She was the one that designed the very intricate and revealing graph of how to study the expressions during this time. And she's offered us as a model, offered herself as a model during the entire Ango. And also behind the scenes, organizing the groups and doing all the little tasks that are part of just making it a community that works together. The Shuso is the person that leads that. You may know Ikai as a Sangha member, but do you know her as a health giver, an acupuncturist, travels to Vietnam, travels even to the village in Soho to offer healing services. She's a wife. Her husband Paul is here supporting her. A volunteer in different aspects of life. She volunteers at the for the blind, teaching people how to knit. And a friend to so many. That is how I understand expression of the Buddha way. Every aspect of her life. So expression comes in many guises, and it is a way to, when we see what we're expressing, we can understand really what the meaning of our life is. We can really see that. If we don't get caught up in our idea of what our life is about, inflating ourselves, or deflating ourselves, there's not a lot of difference between the two, really. It's just a lot of swollenness. What is real is what is here and what is being expressed. If it's not being expressed, it's just an idea. Of course, what's not being expressed is also an expression. And I'll give you an example from an old Zen story. This story appears in three of the major koan collections, The Gateless Gate, Blue Cliff Record, and The Book of Serenity. So it must have something that grabs people, that it was continually collected. So I'm just going to collapse all of those because each one is slightly different and to what might work for us. One day, the monks of the Eastern Hall and the Western Hall were fighting over a cat. Nansen held the cat up and said, "If you can say a word of Zen, I won't kill the cat." No one said anything. And Nansen cut the cat in two. Later, Joshu, the great Joshu, was Nansen's student. He came in and Nansen told him what happened. Joshu put his sandals on his head and walked out the door. Nansen said, "If you had been there, you would have saved the cat." So imagine just sitting in the Dharma hall. Teacher walks in, holding the cat that you and you've been fighting over. The administrative wing and the people that are just sitting are fighting over this cat, and the teacher walks in and holds the cat up. The expressions on so many of your faces reveals that you're cat lovers. You who have been arguing over this cat, say a word of Zen, or I'll cut it in two. I will kill the cat. So let me step back and say, as you can imagine, there are many, many commentaries on this koan. Some revolve around the dispute itself. Was it about whether or not the cat had Buddha nature? You know, Joshu had an issue with a dog having Buddha nature. So was that about Buddha nature? Common trope of the times. Does this bird have Buddha nature? Does this broken being you see before you have Buddha nature? Or was it about the existence or non-existence of catness? Those are both kind of tiresome theoretical arguments. To me, they're tiresome. But then I'm Zen, so. And they're poorly tolerated in Zen practice. So maybe the argument was whether who gets to have the good mouser? Or who gets to have something that'll come up and purr? Your face. Yours versus mine. I want it. Or maybe the kind of humanitarian sense, I can take better care of that cat than you can. What was the separation that caused the fight over the cat? Theoretical or physical? Schism in the Sangha, broken apart. So what was Nansen showing when he held up the grounds of the dispute? If you can say a word of Zen, I won't kill the cat. So people always, particularly new to Zen, are very shocked that a renowned Zen teacher would actually kill a sentient being. Others say, he didn't really kill the cat. The whole story's a metaphor. Killing a cat is a way of saying killing the idea of separation. The false dichotomy of yours or mine, either or. Buddha nature, no Buddha nature. Did he actually kill the cat? If we say no, we're denying the blood on the floor. If we say yes, we're missing the analogy of reconciliation of opposites. The relative and absolute that we've been chanting all week. Oh, yeah, the relative and absolute. Like an arrow meeting in midair, two arrows meeting in midair. I wonder if it would be easier for us if it were a statue of a cat. Or of a Buddha. If you can say a word of Zen, I won't break this statue of the Buddha. Or Myoko, it might be a beautiful bowl, a tea bowl, an ancient tea bowl.
No!
What would we do, I wonder? Each of us. You know, it reminds me, and it reminds certainly reminds many of you, of the story of King Solomon. He listened to two women who claimed that the baby was theirs. And he said, okay, we'll split the baby in half and give each of you half. And only the real mother said, no, I'll give up the baby. And that way, King Solomon knew who the true mother was. But that didn't happen in this story. Interesting. Nansen was witnessing a paralysis of the Sangha, a lack of expression on the part of those who were gathered in that Dharma hall, those fighting over the cat. It is really a question of expression, just exactly what we've been studying. Koan itself is known as Nansen's cat, but I like to think of it as, has the cat got your tongue? So, of course, you know me, I had to go look up where that expression came from. Forgive me, there are these kinds of people that love etymology, love studying sources of things, and it's interesting. In English, it started as a children's expression and was only really found in print in the early 1800s. But what they say is that in children's expressions may have been around for thousands of years, but just were never written down. And it means, why are you so quiet? Quiet. Why? Don't you speak? Cat got the tongue? It's also available in French and Spanish. French says, have you given your tongue to the cat? Slightly different. Huh? And a Spanish form is, has the cat eaten your tongue? Ooh. I think it's far-fetched to imagine that the Chinese story somehow migrated into our European language. Something else may be the correspondence. I'm not sure what. Might be the nature of cats. They're independent. And although they can be quite vocal, those of us who've had cats know, they're kind of known as being rather stoic and silent, aloof, not involved. You know how the dog behaves when you open the can of food, and how the cat behaves. And when we look at a cat, and when the cat looks at us, what is expressed? Well, when I was a kid, somebody said, cat got your tongue. It meant I was too shy or disconcerted, and I've become mute for some reason. Maybe I was afraid. Shocked, maybe. When we're afraid, you know, it's really easy to be mute. We can't express anything at all. We shut down. Or, on the other hand, we may just talk a whole lot and not express anything. Both are forms of paralysis. Over-talkative one is just a screen to hide behind the inability to express the truth. I don't know. Why do we become mute, paralyzed? Or just as bad, babble without any true expression. A fear of being wrong, of being seen as foolish or bad, not being safe. Better to stay quiet and safe, or blast everyone with a torrent of words so they can't see you. Neither is expression. And we fill our mind with rationalizations, doubts, and arguments. We forget what Myoko called home, what Tokyo called the center, that small voice that knows very well to speak up. But we become entangled in what Esho called the selfing. There's Nansen holding up the cat. Say a word of Zen and I won't cut the cat. You have to say something. And we say something like, don't kill the cat. We allow that flow to come through us. In other situations, we might say things like, that feels wrong. Or, I'm not comfortable talking about them like this. Or simply, stop. When we find our voice like that, we begin to trust more. And I confess to you that I see in my own life, most recently, how easy it is to just let things slide. To not stand up and say, don't kill the cat. I sadly admit that over the past year or so, cat's got my tongue. So I vow to demand more clarity of myself, to trust myself more, and listen to my own heart, to what I know is true. And carefully listen to others, even if they're not expressing it clearly. Even if it's only a hint to check it out. I promise you, I will do that. So yesterday, Esho mentioned the two Sangha members, the teachers in training, who have recently left our community. When their training began to falter, I was unwilling to advance them any further. They could not tolerate that. Not all training succeeds. That's why the position is called teacher in training. But the teacher desperately wants it to. And can try too hard. And be a little blind. And that is the reason why the teacher needs to hear from the Sangha, don't kill the cat. When something is off, speak up. You know, there are many, many scandals in the Zen world, and Lord knows, in all the other faith traditions, that could have been averted if the Sanghas had stood up and helped and not turned a blind eye. Recognizing that teachers are not perfect by any means and they need help. I'm asking for your help. I'm admitting my own mistakes, my own blindness, my own selfing, my own, leaving the home, leaving the center, but I need your help. And any teacher that you go to or any organization that you belong to needs your help. You can't just blindly follow along. Each one of us is a part of a whole that must express. And I recognize in my own case, and probably for many of you, one element in our reluctance is a kind of sense of loyalty. We feel loyal to an institution, to a cause, to a person. But what trumps that loyalty to an institution, a cause, or a person? A greater loyalty to what is right, to what is correct. You know, when I talked about this koan some 25 years ago, I rhetorically asked, what would you do? And Miyoko Sensei, who was a beginning student, said, don't kill the cat! And that was back in the day when we were much more formal than we are now. Imagine saying, don't play favorites. Don't abuse others. Don't use drones. Don't starve others. Don't keep those people in prison. Don't punish Bradley Manning with 35 years imprisonment. Edward Snowden. Deep Throat, Ellsberg, Silkwood, Serpico. Courageous people, very loyal to their institutions, and yet loyal to a greater, more correct good. And they spoke up. Losing their jobs and their freedom. You know, Bradley Manning could have smoked dope, drank a lot of booze, and waited to get out of the army. Instead, he said, this is wrong. This is a crime. And it hurts everyone involved. Not just the victims. Who are the victims there? The servicemen in the helicopters were laughing. They too are victims. All the way up and down the chain of command, contaminated by violence, impersonality. We all need to have the same courage as those kinds of whistleblowers. In our society, where we work, in our sangha, and in our families. Last week, I was mediating a family situation having to do with how someone was going to die. There was a bully involved. Everywhere you go, an opportunity. And there was one person in that family that was able to speak up to what was really going on. This is to have what I think is a heart for the way. Dogen said it this way. To have a heart for the way is not to neglect the great road of Buddhas and ancestors, but to treasure it and protect it. For the sake of the way, you stop wanting name, fame, and profit. Here's my favorite line. You regard gold as shit and fame as snot. Well, maybe we can't go that far, but I like it anyway. Not betraying the truth and not accepting the false, you honor the guidelines and align your life with the prevailing customs of the community. In this way, you don't sell off the daily rice and tea of the Buddhas and ancestors. This is what it means to have a heart for the way. Joshu had a heart for the way. He put his sandals on his head, walked out the door. Some say that putting your sandals on your head in China meant a sign of mourning. Huh? So it's like really upside down. The sandals go on the feet. But when someone dies, sandals go on the head. It's upside down not to say, don't kill the cat. It's crazy not to say, don't kill the cat. Maybe we can't think of the wisest, cleverest thing to say. But if we open our mouth and trust ourselves, what needs to be said will come out. We don't really know if what we do is right. But we must act. And we must do our best. So last week, I was walking across Washington Square Park from sitting with my dying friend that we memorialized yesterday. My heart was very open and soft from sitting with her for about an hour. And I met by chance an old Dharma friend, an American guy who is part of the Tibetan lineage. And we just sat down together for a few minutes in the park and held hands. And he told me that he'd been called to a monastery in India, in his lineage, and they've made him the abbot there. And how inadequate he felt to the task. And I looked at him and I laughed. And then he laughed. We don't know. We put in these situations and we just act. We do our best. We express what needs to be expressed. We practice hard so that we can do that. But we just do our best and keep on. That's what I hope we'll do. We just do our best and just keep on. So I've handled things clumsily. And I let the cat get my tongue for a while. But I encourage all of you to have the courage to say, don't kill the cat. And I even have a gatha for you that may help. If you have a heart for the way, there's work to do. It's not so easy. You make mistakes. And still, your practice nourishes what is real, what is true, all around you. You just keep